Lowe's helps refresh your garden in time for Mother's Day. Right now, get 5 bags of 1.5 cubic foot Scotts Naturescapes mulch for just $10. Plus, select 1.5 gallon annuals hanging baskets make the perfect gift. Now 2 for only $15. The best garden starts with great deals. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 5/7. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, discount taken at time of purchase.
Real ghost stories from real people. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.
It's the kind of house you only see in movies. The towering Victorian sort with peeling gingerbread trim and attic windows shaped like eyes. The kind of place where the wind always seems to whisper your name and the silence is never quite empty. But this story isn't from a movie. It comes from a real home. One with history in its bones, and something else still hiding deep within its walls. Our story tonight begins with a letter from a listener who spent most of her childhood in such a house, nestled in a historic district surrounded by southern charm, and drenched in an atmosphere that turned from unsettling to dangerous. From the outside, it was majestic. Inside, there was a room that no one dared to speak about. A room that breathed differently, a room that watched you back. She speaks of a presence, an evil that seemed confined to a space no bigger than a closet, yet strong enough to choke the breath from your lungs. A place where something once fell, or perhaps was pushed, something that never moved for a decade, as until the moment she ran for her life. But was it all in her head? Childhood imagination? Running wild? Or is there something about certain places, certain rooms, that holds on to more than just dust and time? Something that waits for just the right moment. Let's get to the letter. They write, "Tony, I've listened to your show for a long time, always thinking maybe one day I'd submit something. But every time I sat down to write, I'd stop. There's a fear that still lingers in me. A fear tied to one specific room in the house I grew up in. A fear that feels foolish until I remember how it made me feel. So this is me finally getting it out. Maybe you can help me make sense of it. I was 7 years old when we moved into the house, massive Victorian-style mansion that sat up on a slope in the old part of town. Quiet, tree-lined streets, old lampposts, neighbors who still waved from their porches. It was the kind of home people admired from the outside, but living in it, that was something different entirely. The place had been built in 1870 by a family named Drayton. My parents said we were lucky. It was a steal for its size. 3 full stories and an attic that spanned the entire house. Technically, it was 4 stories if you counted the basement. We called it the downstairs. But it wasn't the kind of downstairs you'd want to play in. At first, it was just strange in a way that old houses are, settling noises, weird drafts, closets with locks on the outside. I remember the front door had this huge brass knocker shaped like a lion's head. No one used it. People who visited always rang the bell. And once inside, they usually glanced up, just for a second, at the massive staircase in the shadowed hallway beyond. But for me, the house became real the moment I saw the attic windows. They were shaped like eyes, curved at the top, narrow at the sides. My friends called them Amityville windows, though I didn't get the reference until I saw the movie years later. After that, I understood why they were always hesitant to spend the night. That house had its layers. The top floor was always quiet, too quiet. The attic creaked when no one was up there. But it was the basement that got under your skin. You didn't go down there unless you had to. My mom kept decorations stored down there, Halloween bins, Christmas lights, Easter baskets, and there were still remnants of what it used to be. Rusted metal stalls from when horses were kept, a side entrance where the old carriage would have rolled in. The rooms were divided oddly. One part was walled off by thick sliding metal doors on an overhead track. They were heavy and loud, industrial almost. I used to imagine they were built to lock something in. Behind them was what I called the backside. The servants' quarters, a root cellar, and something else, something I've never been able to forget. The furnace room. It was small, barely big enough to turn around in, but it had a coal chute like something out of an old prison, black, gaping, built at a slant that looked like it could suck in light. The furnace itself had been modernized by the time we moved in, but the chute was still there, metal, stained, and cold. That room was the only place in the entire house that made me feel like I was being watched from the inside. From the moment I first stepped in, I could feel something pressing on me, a weight in the air. I told my mom once that the room hated me. She laughed it off, just childhood imagination. But that feeling never left. Even now, just thinking about it, I can feel my chest tighten. Every time I had to go in, I'd try to be quick, grab the box, the chair, the flashlight, whatever I was sent for, and get out. But every time I felt like something didn't want me to leave. Not something physical, nothing I could see, but it was there, hovering, holding its breath. One time I forgot the key to unlock the metal doors and stood there staring through the gap, trying to psych myself up to reach inside and slide it open anyway. I swear to you, Tony, I heard someone whisper my name. I bolted back up the stairs, heart pounding, and didn't go down for a week. It wasn't just me. My brother hated the furnace room. So did my dad, though he never said so outright. He started storing fewer things in there as the years went by. Friends who visited didn't know the details, but when asked to grab something from the basement, they'd come back pale, brushing it off with nervous laughter. The coal chute started showing up in my dreams, always the same. I was stuck inside trying to scream, but my voice wouldn't come. I'd wake up gasping for air, sometimes in tears, but I never told anyone. Not until now. One summer, my cousin stayed with us for a week. We were supposed to grab the pool chairs from the furnace room. I warned him. It sounds silly now, but I told him not to go in without me. He shrugged me off. When I found him a few minutes later, he was standing in the middle of the room, just staring at the chute. I called his name three times before he even blinked. When he finally looked at me, he asked if there was someone else down there with us. There wasn't. That's when I started keeping count of how many people said something felt wrong about that room. 9. 9 people over the years, not including me, all said the same thing. Something wasn't right in there. That it felt too cold, that the shadows were wrong, that it felt angry. I don't know what happened in that space, Tony, but I've never forgotten it. Never stopped wondering if we were all just feeding each other's imaginations, or if something was feeding on us. It's been years since I lived in that house, Tony. I'm 35 now, married, 3 kids, and a world away from Glenmore Hill. But I still dream about the furnace room, still feel its breath when I walk down dark hallways or hear something fall in the night. The last time I went in there, I was 19. Home from college for Easter break. My mom, always sentimental, asked me to go downstairs and grab the Easter baskets. They were stored in the corner of the furnace room behind a stack of lawn chairs. I remember hesitating at the top of the stairs. It was broad daylight, sunlight filtering through the dusty glass blocks near the outer basement door. But that room, even in daylight, it had a kind of darkness that didn't care about the sun. I walked in. Nothing felt different at first. The metal doors slid open with the usual groan. I stepped inside, flipping the light switch. It flickered, buzzed, then stabilized. The air hit me like a wall, cold, heavy, still. The kind of stillness that warns you not to move too fast. I took maybe 2 steps toward the back wall when it hit. That pressure, that presence. It was like the air had hands, Tony. Hands pressing down on my shoulders, wrapping around my throat. I couldn't breathe. My heart pounded so hard it hurt. Every instinct in me screamed to leave now. I turned, ran, no baskets, no hesitation, just panic. As I crossed the threshold into the main basement, my foot hit the first step, and that's when I heard it. A loud, sharp bang. Something heavy crashing behind me. I turned and saw it. My dad's old axe, the one that had been resting upright against the furnace room wall for as long as I could remember, now laying flat across the doorframe. It had fallen, but not just fallen, thrown maybe. Dropped with purpose, it landed exactly where I'd been running a second earlier. If I had left just a heartbeat later, it would have struck me right in the chest. That axe hadn't moved in over a decade. No one touched it. No one even talked about it. It was just there, like part of the room, watching. I told my dad. He shrugged, said maybe it slipped, but he didn't meet my eyes when he said it. My mom didn't say anything. She just quietly stopped asking me to go down there after that. After that day, I never stepped foot in the furnace room again. Over time, other pieces of the house's past started surfacing. I started digging. Old newspaper archives. Whispers from neighbors. Little fragments that never quite formed a full story. What I found only deepened the questions. The original owner, Eleanor Drayton, had died in the house. Fell down the main staircase from the top floor, they said. A tragic accident. But some local accounts hinted otherwise. Murmurings that she'd been seen arguing with someone near the attic door just hours before she fell. There were rumors about the house staff, too, specifically a man who worked in the coal room. No name ever listed, just the furnace man. According to a handwritten letter tucked inside an old church bulletin we found in a kitchen drawer one year, he was rumored to be violent. There was talk that Eleanor had wanted him dismissed. The staff allegedly warned her not to anger him. The letter ended with a sentence that never made sense until I was older. Some fires don't go out with water. Some burn in silence. I don't know if he died in that house. I don't know if he's the one I felt in that room. But something stayed behind. Something hateful. Something territorial. Years later, when I brought my husband and kids to visit my parents for Thanksgiving, I swore I heard something scratching at the furnace room door. I hadn't even told my kids about that part of the house. But that night I woke to find my 6-year-old daughter standing at the top of the basement stairs. She was whispering. When I asked her what she was doing, she said, "The man told me to help with the coal." We left the next morning. I still visit my parents, but I never sleep there anymore. And I won't go near the basement. Not even to peek. Sometimes I wonder if something was left unfinished in that room. Something that was never buried properly. Or maybe it was never human to begin with. I've spent years trying to convince myself it was all in my head. But that axe didn't fall on its own. Thanks for reading this, Tony. I'm not looking for answers, really. Just wanted to finally say it out loud. Maybe someone else out there knows what I'm talking about. Maybe they've seen the eyes in the attic, or felt the breath in the dark, or heard the coal chute whisper. If so, I believe you. Thanks. When we hear a story like Elaine's, the easy reaction is to reach for logic. Maybe it was the age of the house, the drafts, the suggestion planted by childhood fears. Maybe the axe slipped. Maybe the furnace room was just unsettling by design. But there's something deeper here, something harder to brush away. 9 different people felt it. Described the same weight in the air, the same unseen pressure, the same dread. Her cousin lost in a trance. A little girl sleepwalking toward a room she'd never heard about, murmuring about coal. These aren't just coincidences. At a certain point, too many unexplainable moments stop feeling random and start feeling targeted. Psychologically, it's true. Places can influence our emotions. Claustrophobic spaces, stale air, even infrasound, low frequencies created by old machinery or airflow have been known to cause nausea, unease, and even hallucinations. That coal chute might have been acting like an echo chamber for more than just sound. But science doesn't explain the axe, doesn't explain the voice whispering her name, and it sure doesn't explain a child untouched by any of those memories. Waking in the night, ready to shovel coal for a man who hasn't existed in 100 years. Some believe objects and places absorb what they witness, that certain rooms trap emotion like static. In the case of the Drayton house, maybe the furnace room wasn't just a space, it was a scar. One that never healed, one that waits for footsteps it remembers, even if no one else does. The most chilling part of Elaine's story isn't what she saw. It's what she almost didn't survive. That axe had waited over a decade to move, and it moved with intent. Which begs the question, what else is waiting?
Want more real ghost stories from real people? Then press subscribe now. We're dropping new ghost stories every single day. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.